Welcome to Diversity Connects Us. This podcast highlights lived experiences and inspirational stories of strength and tenacity. We will share profound and courageous dialogues that influence diversity, equity, and inclusion by breaking the barriers and labels of stereotypes, confronting biases, and offering best practices to achieve a more significant, cultural, and emotionally intelligent mindset.
Have you ever felt a feeling of not belonging, even when you've earned the spot at your school or worked up in your career? This might be imposter syndrome. Imposter syndrome refers to the phenomenon when an individual internalizes their accomplishments due to fear of being exposed as a fraud. You might also be wondering what this has to do with DEI. This illustrates the many facets of DEI and how to bridge those gaps. We are excited to have you here today. I am looking forward to you meeting my guest. We value your feedback and opinions. Please drop them in the chat, in comment boxes on social media. We intend to respond to as many questions as possible. We value your feedback, and this takes a great deal of effort for us to pull off. So we are eternally grateful to our loyal guests. My name is Rochelle Carrier, and I'm a personal DEI consultant and authoress of Emotional Intelligence, a toolkit for managing diversity, equity, and inclusion. The link to purchase my books will be in the comments. And for a living, I help organizations implement DEI plans and reframe their cultural mindsets through thought-provoking workshops and webinars. Join us as we share the space in DEI. Today with us is Bree Clark. Hello, Bree. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you. I appreciate so much that you're here today with us.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for having me on. I'm super excited to talk to you today about all the things. I've listened to your show, and I just think it's great, the work you're doing.
Oh, thank you so much. And you too, if you can tell the audience a little bit about yourself in your unique way.
Yeah, I don't know if you want me to do it in my unique way. I tell people all the time that I wear a lot of hats. First and foremost, I'm a mom and a wife, but occupationally, I am a multimedia journalist and recently launched a talk show called The Real Deal about imposter syndrome and mental health. But I have been in the news industry for over a decade and got my start when I was 19 years old. I got thrown into this busy newsroom in Houston, Texas, and found out very quickly that I had no idea what I was doing just because I didn't have enough experience to be where I was. So my twists and turns in my career has just kind of landed me where I am today. And I'm just super excited to just kind of share some of the trials and tribulations that have led me to the wonderful life that I've been fortunate enough to live.
Of course, of course. So you said The Real Deal is a show that you have and that you do focus also on imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. How or what role has imposter syndrome played in your life, if it has?
Well, yeah, there's been many places in my life where imposter syndrome has been a factor. I didn't know that that was the case until a few years ago. I am in the news industry, and most of us are dealing with some type of mental health illness. And for a lot of us, that's imposter syndrome. You are asked to perform on a level that can sometimes blur the lines between what you feel is your authentic self and the pressure to live up to what people are telling you you should be in this space. So it stirs up a lot of complicated feelings that not many of us are trained to deal with. Add on top of that I am African American and have lived my life in America, where a lot of people underestimate, you know, who I am and what I'm capable of. And a lot of times that in itself fosters imposter syndrome, where you're saying I'm not good enough, or I have to work harder or 10 times harder to get so-and-so or to get this thing or to achieve this status. And a lot of times that can just weigh how you feel about yourself and how you feel about the accomplishments that you've garnered throughout that time.
Right. It's interesting you said that. Do you think others impose that feeling or project that feeling onto us to feel that way by questioning, by micromanaging, by making suggestions or inferences, not understanding how or why, or, you know, that we are where we are. Do you think that is also a factor?
100%. I believe that the way that people view you, if enough people say the same thing or a similar thing to you over time, you will start to internalize that as your own voice or your own thoughts. And I think that is a struggle that not everybody understands. For example, I went to a state where there weren't many people of color, not just African-Americans. There weren't many Hispanics or Asians or anything like that. And during that time, I had to represent an entire social group. And during that time, I did get questions about if I was a diversity hire. You got this job because they needed someone of color, because there's no one in the state that really looks like you or would be willing to move to the state that looks like you. Now, not everyone said that, but to hear those things and to live the life that a person of color has lived, it's hard not to sometimes think, hey, did this company hire me because they just needed someone that looked like me? Did they need to fill a quota? Am I filling a quota? And so you have these questions that make you question your accomplishments. They make you question your capabilities. And when you have more than one person ask you that, it's hard to ignore.
Right. And how much did belonging mean to you? And can it benefit you?
Yeah. Well, belonging meant quite a bit to me. I think more so not for the community that was questioning, but right, for the community that I was representing. That has been probably the biggest struggle, if we're talking about my personal and professional life, of making sure that I belong in any space. My family is multicultural, so there was a lot of times where I had people from both sides, not just African-Americans, but also Caucasians and other groups, who told me what they thought I should be, or told me how they thought I should act or look or wear a fit. And so there has always kind of been that sense of belonging. Where do I fit in the equation, and how do I make the most impact, and how does that impact my purpose? That has been a big question, and that has been something that's been very hard to navigate and decide if how important that is or not. I think it is important because, I mean, we all want to belong. And it helps when we're connected. I mean, that's the whole point of the show, is how our diversity connects us. There comes a time when that could be more harmful than anything else. You can take that sense of belonging to an extreme, and the questions that come with that can be hard to navigate to the point where you're a little lost in that.
Right. When you say the cost of belonging can be extreme, it's very interesting. You triggered a question. I was raised in Montreal, Canada. And we lived in white suburbia because the schools were better there. And what I found, when you say belonging, I wanted to belong so much that I assimilated to the point of not remembering my culture. Mm-hmm. That I was so focused on looking Eurocentric, dressing the way, you know, corporate America wanted me to dress. There was so much focus on, this is what I need to do to belong. And then I found that I lost my Haitian heritage along the way. I did. I literally remember coming back into my authentic self after I realized that belonging didn't really matter that much to me, that I still needed to bring my whole self to the corporate space at the time and to just live my more authentic self.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's hard. I mean, that's hard for a lot of us, especially when you've grown up in neighborhoods where your peers are mostly Caucasian or they don't look like you. I mean, it's hard to figure out, hey, am I assimilating, or is this what I've always known? And this is, you know, a part of me. And so there's a very thin line. And when you have that many questions for so long, it's very, very hard to know where you fit in. And if you don't know where you fit in, you can't take that into a boardroom. You can't take that into your job and show up as fully as you want to. And all the accolades that come from that can be hard to accept as well, because it's, did I do this? Or did I just fall into this some kind of way?
Right, right. How much do you think an individual realistically can do to lessen the imposter syndrome if, you know, they confront discrimination or consistently experiencing themselves being the only one in the room?
Yeah, I think there's a lot that they can do. I do believe it's hard. Nothing that I'm about to say is easy. I don't want anybody to say, oh, well, I mean, it's easy for her to say, because it's very hard. You have to set boundaries and feel very comfortable in what you're saying. Think about it beforehand and commit to whatever it is that you come up with as your boundary, because we do live in a culture where things are sometimes twisted to fit whoever's in charge. You know, it's, well, for an example, when I was at one of the stations, I needed my lighting to be different than everyone else. I was the only person of color and my lighting needed to be different.
I hear you.
Yeah. So we were building an entire studio, an entire new studio, and we were doing light tests. And as we were doing these light tests, I said, hey, you know, this lighting for me, if this is going to be my spot over here, it can't be the same as all of your other anchors or your other reporters. I am not going to look like myself. My skin tone's not going to look like it does in person. I'm going to look very washed out, or I'm not going to be lit at all. And I had one of my colleagues joke and say, well, I thought we were trying to have everything equal now. He thought it was a harmless joke. But I said, hey, no. All I'm asking for is lighting, just lighting, so that I look the way I want to look on camera. And you're turning it into this whole social issue that you think is a joke, but it's not. You know, you're going to show up the way that you want to show up, and I'm going to have to just deal with it because I'm the minority here and it doesn't work for everyone else. And so I had to stick to my guns, right? But let's say I was a few years before when I was wavering in if what I had to say was as important or if I should just go along with the flow and not make a fuss and not be the angry Black woman, you know, in my office. And that would have gone differently. I probably would have said nothing. I probably would have just let everything go the way that it was going. But I had to decide, look, if this is important to me, then I need to say something, because what about the other 5 Black people that they decide to hire later on? You know, what if it's for them, they're having to still speak up because I said nothing, because I just went with the flow? You know, what kind of culture am I creating if I don't set boundaries and speak up for myself, but doing it all in reason?
Right, right. Do you think that it required a certain wisdom or maturity? We often do our shows also on emotional intelligence. And I think on your part, you had processed the information in a way, because you mentioned, you know, the angry Black woman, and don't even get me started. So
it's a whole nother show.
That's a whole other show. So, but I think that you were able to park certain emotions to be able to deliver what you needed to be done for you, because that was important for you. Because you said 5 years ago or a couple of years ago, it wouldn't have gone that way. Maybe it's something that you wouldn't have shared and you would have gone with the flow. Today, you actually stood up for yourself.
Yeah.
And did that bring more confidence for you? And then has the imposter syndrome lessened?
Yeah, it has helped me be more self-aware. It has helped me ask myself these questions. It's helped me actually have some of these hard conversations in my head before I even address them. And I think that that's kind of key when you're trying to deal with and overcome these imposter feelings that you have, because it's hard to just react. For some of us, we either don't react or we're way too reactive. That's kind of what I've seen. And there's a balance between, is this important enough? And how do I address it? And in the right timing, right? It's all about that. What I've learned is that you don't have to scream to get what you want. You don't have to yell to get what you want, but you have to be bold to get what you want. To be bold enough to say, hey, this is not okay, and I'm not going to stand for it. And how can we find a better solution, right? Because I didn't just say, hey, this lighting's not right. I don't like it. Fix it. That was not my response. This is, hey, this isn't going to work for me. This is why. Can we do this? And ultimately, the solution was to create a switcher that switched just a few lights that would be on me majority of the time to my color temperature, and to switch it off when I was no longer in the studio so that all of my other colleagues could have the lighting that they needed. But when I was in the studio, that I also got what I needed as well. And so coming up with a solution as well kind of helped, not by myself, not, hey, we're not going to fix this, Bree, until you come up with something. That wasn't the case. Right. It was working to find out what can we do, because I also had to understand and have the wisdom to know these people had never dealt with a person of color in their studio. They didn't know how to handle that. So it wasn't, we're not going to deal with this because who is she? They honestly did not have the knowledge or the experience to give me what I needed to feel included and a part and belonging in this space to do what I needed to do to the best of my ability. So to answer your question, there's a balance there of wisdom, of understanding, and helping to give some of those solutions that we're asking for.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And has it affected your career? Has imposter syndrome, you think, affected your career or less now?
It's less now than it did before. There are still times. I mean, we almost didn't have this talk show that I have now, because my thought when someone approached me about doing this talk show was, who am I to have my own talk show? You know, and I didn't pull on the fact that there's Oprah and Tamron Hall and all these other people who are in this space. It was, I've had a hard time with people accepting me in the positions that I've been in before. This is even more so. How could I possibly provide anything of worth? And as we started talking through these emotions, I said, hey, I'm suffering some imposter syndrome. And we decided then this is what the show needs to be about. It needs to be about imposter syndrome and not just the study that was done back in the 70s that had just a small group of women at that time take the survey. No, it needed to be about our time, today's time, with all of the different facets that we're dealing with now. So not just occupation, not just gender, but also race, socioeconomic background, and age. These are all things that need to be about a part of that conversation now when we're talking about imposter syndrome and how to deal with it. And also letting these systems know that this is something that you are probably perpetuating and pushing onto the people that work for you. And this is how you stay vigilant to know if this is running rampant throughout your organization.
Right. That's a big one. If it's rampant throughout the organization, because I think also that's where the turnovers become really, really high in organizations, because people do not feel heard, included, they feel unworthy, and they sabotage. Sometimes you can even sabotage your own career and self-worth into thinking that exactly it, you know, I'm not worthy enough to be here, even though we have all the accomplishments.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a big one. Even though we have accomplishments, because we've been told our whole lives that it's not enough, that it's not enough, that if you want to be where so-and-so is, you have to make sure that you are 2 times better. You don't just need the bachelor's, you need the master's and the PhD just to get that entry-level position. Those are some of the things that we've been told. And so, of course, we're going to think, oh man, this isn't good enough because I'm not exhausted. I didn't burn myself out doing it. I didn't stay those extra hours. I didn't have recommendations from so-and-so and so-and-so. Like that is what we have been told. That's the narrative. And so, yeah, of course, we don't think the accomplishments are enough, because to us, they aren't accomplishments. They're just the beginning, the prerequisite to qualify us.
Absolutely. And then we tend to internalize, like you said earlier in the show, then we internalize those feelings and believing that those are true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm. And then when you look back, are there things you might have said or done differently had you not felt this way?
I would have showed up more boldly. I would have applied to more positions. I would have accepted more positions. There have been positions that I turned down because I just thought, oh, I don't know how that's going to go. I also don't think maybe I'm the right person, so I'm going to pass. You're seeing that more often in my generation than any other generation. Women, especially, turning out down positions or taking lower pay than their peers because they think that they are not worth it or that someone missed something. I mean, Google has a whole course on this. It's an onboarding course on imposter syndrome because they have so many people who think that they've fooled Google into believing that they're accomplished, you know, everything. We're talking about an organization that literally knows pretty much all of your information, if I'm being honest. You're not going to fool them. If they've hired you, then you're worthy of that. And so I think for me, I would do things a little differently. I would take more of those opportunities and I would own them, you know.
Right.
I wouldn't go into those positions thinking, I have so much to learn and saying, hey, teach me, teach me, teach me, teach me. Mm. That's good. You know, to a certain extent. But at the end of the day, I was hired because I brought something that they needed. And I needed to focus more on that, on advancing whatever it was that they needed, that they saw in me, than trying to add all these other things to.
Right. That's amazing that you said that. I was thinking of my bio and, oh, this just triggered something. So I realized in my bio, usually when I apply for speaking engagements, they ask for 150 words or less in the bio. And I have 202 words. So I did this morning, actually. And I'm doing a talk and they asked me to send 150 words. And I thought, oh, well, what if I cut something out that's really, really important that they need to know? Even though now, I mean, I've gotten paid and everything to do this talk and they probably, yeah, I know. So I'm looking at the bio and I'm thinking, well, should I remove this degree? Should I remove that degree? Should I not put the books in there? Should I remove the books? And that, my doubts were surfacing.
Yeah.
Yep. And I thought, well, I have, you know, multiple certifications and XYZ. Should I remove two? I'm like, oh, but what if they need those two? And
yeah, they might change their mind. Yeah.
They might change their mind.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that a lot of us deal with that, especially us who are suffering from imposter syndrome, that they might change their mind, that they might find something out, you know, that we gave them all the things and that was barely enough. So, wow, we better not leave anything out. Thank you for sharing that with me. Because, yeah, I think that's essentially what imposter syndrome is, this fear of being found out. That you aren't who you say you are, or that your accomplishments aren't what they are, when that's not the case. I know for me, you gave me this memory. After I graduated from undergrad, I kept every piece of paper, every transcript, every essay, everything, because I was worried that they were going to come back and say, actually, you didn't earn this degree. You need to do this over. Or actually, you know, this didn't happen. I had this, and it's silly now. I've since thrown it all away. Right. But I had this real fear that someone was going to come and take my degree from me, you know, or that I was going to have to prove that I actually earned it, you know.
Right.
And it seems silly, you know, and I can laugh about it now. But for a long time, it was a real fear for my husband finding it. And he says, why do you have all these papers? Get rid of these. And I was like, no, I need them. And it was really hard for me to explain to him why. He didn't get it. He didn't understand. And I remember being so frustrated and not having the words to explain the feeling that I was feeling of why I needed to keep all of these papers and all of these records of something that was a done deal.
Right. Of something that was a done deal. That's huge. So it's been observed that women are more likely to believe they need to learn or do more of mm-hmm. something before they're really actually ready to take the risk. And when I was reading the article, it's called overvaluing expertise.
Yeah. Yeah. So actually, with imposter syndrome, there are actually five types that we know of. I'm sure there are more, and I'm sure as we do more studies on imposter syndrome, there will be more types that come out. But there is the expert. Those are people who will not take on a position, they will not do anything, or they will not accept their intelligence unless they know everything that there is to know about whatever it is that they think should be their expertise. And so you have people with PhDs who have been studying these things who still feel like, I didn't read this book, so I don't know anything. I didn't read this one article, so I didn't know anything. Oh, I did get this degree, but I also probably need this to validate, you know, everything else. And that is a big, big, big factor for imposter syndrome. Like, if you're experiencing this, you probably have imposter syndrome, because I don't know anyone who has a PhD that's an idiot. I've never met anyone who's gone through all of that who isn't an expert on something. And I'm pretty sure in the comments, people will disagree. No, I've met some, but I guarantee you, they're not idiots. And so it's interesting to see that these highly capable, intelligent people still feel like they need to know everything to be worthy of whatever it is they feel they need to be worthy of.
Right, right. Do you relate to that? You know, is there something that you want to do but think you need to do or know more of before you are ready?
With the show, actually, we've been diving into mental health. I know that I'm a journalist. I know that I'm great at that. You can't tell me otherwise. I'm very confident in that part of my skills. But when it came to mental health and imposter syndrome, I felt like I couldn't do the show because I didn't have any degree in any of those relating fields. And so at first, when we were talking about the show, I was like, yeah, we're going to do it on imposter syndrome. I committed to it. I had committed to our topic. And then a couple of, you know, weeks before filming, I started thinking, oh my gosh, I am not an expert on this. There's all these other people who've written books. They've, you know, have seminars, they have courses and workshops. And here I am, just this journalist from Houston, Texas, who isn't a part of that space. So that is something that was pretty hard for me. I started reading every book that I could on imposter syndrome and mental health, and found that in the process, found that I knew more than I thought about the situation. And completely forgot that a lot of my time as a journalist was spent doing stories on mental health initiatives throughout the country. That part didn't register for me. I didn't think about those things. And so a lot of times we can discount our experience because we don't necessarily have the paper to validate what we think we should know. And right. So for me, yes, that's definitely been true. I know before I applied to my first job in journalism, it was hard because I felt like I needed to have all of these stories, this hard-hitting breaking news coverage. How in the world was I going to get that as an undergrad student who had never been in a newsroom? How in the world was I going to send that to someone? They weren't expecting that, but I was. I put that pressure on myself. So yes, very much so. That's been the case.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what would you want the audience to take away?
What I would want them to take away is there's so much more to you than you can even imagine. You are so much more capable than you probably think. And despite the things that you've been told and despite the things that you've told yourself, take the chance on whatever it is that you've been called to do, whatever it is that you're passionate about, whatever work or occupation or job that you think that you can go for, just try, you know? And if you feel like alone, you can't do it, reach out to someone. And so what I tell everyone with dealing with this, what I would leave everyone with is write down those thoughts, because they are thoughts, those imposter thoughts, even if they came from someone else, write them all down. Find somebody that you trust, a mentor, and you share that list with them, because if you read it out loud and you try and say the opposite on your own, your mind is just going to take and flip it right back and say, yeah, but, and you're going to go right back to the list that you created, right?
Right.
Create that list, find the opposite with a mentor, and then just work on that. You can't do this alone.
Right.
Like, none of us can. And so that is kind of what I would leave everyone with, is you can't do this alone. Figure out what is holding you back, and you figure out what it is that you need to do to move past that.
Right. That's great. You know, there's a book I'm reading. I know I wanted to introduce it early on, but our conversation was going so well. It's just called I'm Not Yelling, A Black Woman's Guide to Navigating the Workplace by Elizabeth Leyba. Oh. And here the title is Imposter Syndrome or Imposter Treatment. Mm. So she says here, I remember first hearing this quote from Michelle Obama and thinking, wow. She said, even Michelle Obama has imposter syndrome. And from everything she has said about her background in her experience growing up, it seemed perfectly reasonable. Imposter syndrome, you know, to close, is defined as a psychological condition that is characterized by persistent doubt concerning one's ability or accomplishments, accompanied by the fear, which is what you were saying, of being exposed as a fraud, despite evidence of ongoing success.
Yeah.
So she said, reading, you know, multiple stories about her upbringing and watching the Belonging documentary and reflecting on my own experience as a Black woman allowed her words and her explanation about the impact of imposter syndrome to resonate with me deeply.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was so wonderful to have you. As we reach the top of the Diversity Connects Us Hour, I want to thank all of my listeners for tuning in. My name is Rochelle Carrier, and I'm a DEI personal consultant and EQ coach, and authoress of 2 ebooks, Emotional Intelligence, A Toolkit for Managing Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, and Know Yourself to Know Your Employees. The link to purchase the ebooks are in the show notes. Also, be on the lookout for my and Dr. Rudell's coaching workshops, presentations, and webinars. I also want to thank my producer, Titan32. That's his tag name on Fiverr.com. He does our beautiful edits. To trend with us, #DiversityConnectsUs.